From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, it's the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love. And today on the show, I have a couple of men that I have just met, but I've loved their business for the last several years. And you're going to enjoy this. This is going to be a discussion about family business. And Wayne Bishop is the owner of Bishop's Pumpkin Farm. And Lee Bishop, his son, I presume, is the CEO of Bishop's Pumpkin Farm. And if you don't know about Bishop's, then you haven't ever driven down Highway 65 before, because you get out there and there is just this really cool oasis that is a family-friendly place to go. You can go around holiday seasons, but I think you can go full-time any time of the year. So we're going to get their story today. And so I would just say welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I do want to tell you, Lee's only been CEO for 3 weeks.
So 3 weeks.
He's still in his probationary period.
Okay, so how long is the probationary period last?
I haven't decided yet.
Okay, so let's find out about this. Okay, let's get an overview of the company, then let's dive into those dynamics. So maybe, Wayne, maybe we'll have you start off. So this is a multi-generation company. You guys have been around 50 years. Maybe tell us what you are today and maybe the origination of the business.
Yeah, so what we are today is a farm that hosts 300,000 plus visitors every fall, which is one of the largest operations in the country like us. There's only a handful that host that many. We have 850 temporary employees in the fall. We have about 17 or 18 full-time now people year round. We do some other farming too, but our primary business is this pumpkin farm. And it's more than just pumpkins. Actually, the actual sale of pumpkins now is about 5% of what we, of our revenue in the fall. So it's all the things that go with that to, it's a family day at our place.
Yeah, I've taken my kids, as I was telling you. My kids are 36 and 38 now. It's been a few years since I've been out there, but I've taken my grandkids. It's about time I take I have two newer grandkids. I got to get them out there. But my grandkids that are a little older, I've taken out there, and I just can remember these pictures that I have of us being out there, and it's such an experience. Can you describe, what is there, 100 acres or so? It's really big.
So we actually own 235 now. That's a big change for us in the last 5 years or so. We started on 45 acres.
Okay.
is all that we owned. And then for a long time, we leased ground around us to grow pumpkins on. We finally were able to buy some of that land just a few years ago.
Okay, so I want to better understand the experience. So you've got these, several acres, hundreds of acres, and a lot of people converge. And I've gone out there Halloween type time frame. Are you guys open year round, or is it predominantly in seasonal?
Yeah, no, it's all seasonal. We have stretched that season out now to nine weeks. So shortly after Labor Day and through the first weekend in November, and we may continue to expand that season a little bit. And the only other thing we do is a spring field trip. So it's schools only. We get about 15,000 people in the spring for that. But it's a tiny amount compared to what we do in the fall.
Okay, well, let's get over. Let's bring Lee into the conversation. Lee is the new CEO. And first of all, how's he working out so far?
So far, 3 weeks. Fantastic.
Looks like you're going to pass the probationary period, but see how you do today on the Mark Haney Show. So give us a little bit of your background and what led to you becoming the CEO.
That's a great question. I think we just hired a consultant who said, you know, Lee's probably a better fit than his brother. And so my brother didn't take that so great.
But she also said we should go outside first.
Yeah, yeah. I was the second choice. My brother was the third choice on CEO. But my background is I graduated from Chico State with a finance degree in 2011. I then worked for most of my career at a company called Reynolds & Reynolds, and they did software for car dealerships. Spent all of my time working with service managers and sales managers and controllers and dealers and just answering their questions on the software, really, and osmosisly growing through just being around those people every day. And then in 2020, I moved back to the farm, and I told my dad when I moved back, I don't want to manage people. I'm the controller of the business, and I'm going to start our hard cider brand. And that's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
Now here I am, man, the CEO.
Okay. Well, do you have to manage people in this new job?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I assume so. I love it. Okay. So let's go back to the beginning here. It's 50 years old. Was it started by your family?
Yeah, my parents.
Okay. So your family. Can you tell me about how it started and...
Yeah. So my mother had been a teacher, and she recognized that, you know, Dad was a farmer, and she recognized that kids just didn't know where their food came from, and, you know, didn't know what farms were all about. And so she really just wanted to get kids out to a farm on a field trip, and thought between her and Dad, they thought, well, we could plant a few pumpkins. He had a small field in front of the house that he wasn't doing anything with, and she said, well, I'm going to put pumpkins there and see if we can get kids to come out on field trips. So that's what it started as. And right away we were getting people on weekends too, you know, that the word got out that you could come out and pick a pumpkin off the farm. And but that's all it was in year one. Although maybe she was making pies also that first year, there were a few years in the beginning where she would make pies in her own kitchen and sell on the farm, which was not legal at the time. Interestingly enough, it is now. You can get a cottage food license and do that now, which is great. But at that time, you know, she did it for a few years, and the county came out and said, you know, you can't do that. And so then it was a while before we could get a bakery built and reestablish that part of the business.
So what was it like when, did you grow up working in the business?
Yeah, in fact, we were getting ready to do my other son, Austin, who, by the way, is the COO, other son. They really worked that out between them. After we had this consultant come in and give us advice on how to do this succession, and she felt Lee was more suited to be the CEO, and Austin was a little taken aback, which we all were. She was very blunt, and he went home for the weekend and came back and talked to Lee, and he said, you know, I think she's right. I think that you are a better fit for the CEO, and I'm a better fit for COO. And
interesting.
And so it's fantastic the way they've worked that through. That was almost a year ago. We had that meeting, and so we were working on a year towards making it happen. But anyway, I'm way off track. What was the question?
No, so how did you take over? So okay. Mom and Dad start. Yeah, okay. So Mom and Dad start the business in what, the 70s?
Yeah. So 1973 was the first year. And that's why this came up. My other son was talking to me this morning that we were going to make a video on our just the history of our hayride to the field. So we had done that from the beginning, and my brother and I were the drivers when we were 6 and 7 years old, you know.
Drove the hayride. Yeah, now, are these motorized?
With a tractor. And anyway, so there's
that's hilarious.
We could talk for an hour about that. But,
okay, so you work. They put you to work early.
Yeah, we worked through childhood, and which is fine, you know.
And so that was you and your brother. And then you, as your brother, did he ever stay with the business?
Well, so interestingly enough, we both, you know, when we both graduated from high school, the business was still very small.
Okay.
And neither of us expected to come back. And we went off to college. And when my brother was almost finished with college, my dad showed up one day and said, hey, I need help. You know, the business is growing and I need help. And so my brother went back right after college. He worked about 6 years 6-7 years, something like that, decided he wanted to do something else and left. And that was my opportunity then to go back. Okay. And so that actually is 30 years ago next week.
Wow. And the business has changed a lot since then. When you came back, how big was the business?
We were grossing $300,000 at that time.
Okay. Annual revenue, $300,000.
Yeah.
And now you have 800 seasonal employees to hundreds of acres.
It's quite a bit more.
Yeah. I would assume so. Okay. Yeah. So that was, and at this age, you're an adult, so you were part of driving that growth.
Yeah. So my dad retired in 2005. I worked for him for 10 years, for my mom and dad, worked for them for 10 years. And then he retired in 2005, and I took over. So I got to run the company for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Since I do know the numbers, I can tell you, well, we averaged 15% growth over that 20 years.
Wow.
15% okay. a year. So we're about 14 times now what we were.
That's incredible.
In 05, yeah.
Wow. Congratulations on that growth. And a lot of people are probably interested in the family dynamics here a little bit more. So I have kids that are 36 and 38, and if one of them became the boss, well, that would not work, right? They're both too stubborn. I can't even imagine it. My brother and I, we had a business together. I was actually in part of a family business, and we had video stores, and my three brothers and I bought out my parents bought out the video stores. We had 12 stores. And ultimately, my younger brother and I bought out the older brother. And our titles were, he was more like the financial guy, and I was more like the people guy. So maybe a little bit like you and your brother.
Yep.
Somehow, he let me have the title of CEO, but he was really the brains. And I was the person that was more like in the field. We sold security cameras, had a pretty good size group of security camera companies. And so I was out there with the people and, kind of like a hands-on with all the customers and stuff. He let me have the title of CEO, but he was really the brains behind the business. So, yeah. So I'm kind of curious, Lee, from your standpoint, like your role, do you break up roles so you don't have to run into each other as much? Or do you really manage him?
No, I don't manage him.
He's unmanageable.
Yeah. No, I was like, my brother didn't manage me, brother, and I didn't manage my brother, but we had titles, right? You need something for the,
Well, interesting. He's my older brother by 3.5 years.
Oh, interesting.
He's been at the farm for 15 years, and I've been there for 5.
Yeah.
So for him to just say, you're a better fit for it was, for him, I'm sure, a shot in the heart. He's been there for so long. But naturally, when he came back to the business, it was a lot different than now. And he kind of got siloed into, you're an outside guy. That's what you do. Okay. And when I came back to the business, it was like, we need help inside, And so I think we both kind of got just siloed into our own areas. But I think, and I've told him this, I'm not his boss. I'm his business partner. We are going to be co-owners in this business. We already are co-owners in the business. I'm not going to make a huge decision without him knowing about it. I can't just go build a new attraction, with him not being able to see it.
Are there other brothers and sisters or just you two?
Oh, we have a younger sister, and she worked with the business up until 2020 for about 5 years or so. Yeah. And she left in 2020.
Okay. But you all live locally?
She moved away. She actually, when she quit, she moved up to Idaho.
Okay. She wanted to get away from it all, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. But do you and your brother, so you have all these acreage, do you live near the property or on the property?
My brother lives in the town in Wheatland, and I actually live in Lincoln, so I'm 15 minutes away, but my dad lives on the farm.
Oh, you live on the farm too. Okay. So what we did with our family, and we don't have a business like yours where, you could build, you have enough acreage, you guys could build more houses out there.
Yeah.
We ended up building a family compound where there's 12 of us. We all live, cause we got grandkids and stuff, and we all live on the property together, and we've been doing this for the last few years, and we haven't killed each other yet.
We'll watch the news.
Yeah. Watch the news. So I'm curious if you've thought about doing that kind of thing. What's the family dynamic in terms of, you living in Lincoln, which is, for those listening, that's probably 20-30 minutes from Wheatland. Yep. Wheatland is where the business is, and it's this small town with a Frosty in it, yep. and it's got you guys, but you guys are tucked away. So what's the population of Wheatland? 5,000 people?
Less, 30, oh. about 3,500.
Okay, 3,500. So how is the, you know, are there family meals together where you guys all get together and talk? Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Well, I mean, we all go to work together every day. Mm-hmm. So we actually eat lunch together basically okay. every day, which is more of a family time than it is a work time.
Interesting.
So right in the middle of our day, we have more of a hour family time. But yeah, I mean, we're pretty close family. So even all the holidays, even though we all work together, we still see each other on all the holidays. And my brother has three girls. And so we're always going to a softball game or a volleyball game or soccer game or something, you know, so we're pretty well always together.
One of the things that I've always felt, and it's a Ronald Reagan quote, is that all great change in America begins at the dinner table. And I'm wondering, like, growing up, were you guys at the dinner table talking about business and, you know, what's involved all day long? Was it bred into you as a young person, or were you talking basketball or football or something like that? Describe to me like family time, Lee, when you were growing up.
It was definitely both of those things.
Okay.
We had to have our, you know, hour-long talk about Barry Bonds and San Francisco Giants during that time.
Okay, are we a Barry Bonds fan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
San
Francisco Giants people.
Oh, nice.
I don't know exactly what happened at Balco.
Well, yeah, you can see my Buster Posey shirt right out of the back of my chair over there, so I'm a Giants fan, too.
But definitely at home, it was, you know, we grew up in the business. We lived in Wheatland when we grew up, and my grandparents are still living on the farm, and I started going to work in the bakery with my grandma when I was 5 or 6 years old, and I was helping her in there. And I wasn't allowed to drive hayrides when I was 7 years old.
Yeah, that is a
change. That,
but probably by the time I was 8 or 9, I was probably driving the tractor for my dad while he was moving the pipes. Yeah. So he would get me out of bed at 6:30 in the morning when I was 9 years old, 10 years old. My brother and I would alternate days on who got to do that. But yeah, even at home around the dinner table or when you go to my grandparents' house, work came up a lot frequently.
What were your grandparents like, or what are they like?
My grandpa passed away a few years ago, and my dad will probably tell you a very different story of my grandpa than I will.
Okay.
And my brother will too. My brother will say a lot like my dad. I wasn't around when my grandpa was fading out of the business. I was away. I loved my grandpa. He was a hard worker, man. He is... he's got red dirt in his knuckles, you know, that's mm-hmm. who he is. He just, mm-hmm. he worked and worked and worked. And my grandma's similar, you know, but she obviously had different, you know, passions, the bakery, but they loved work. That's who they were. That's the generation they grew up with.
Yeah. There's a contrasting opinion there. give us your thoughts on that, Wayne.
You know, my dad and I, you know, we were both passionate about the business, and there was a period of time there when I first came back where it was really just the two of us doing all the work mm-hmm. and my mom, and, you know, and then we gradually were able to hire a little bit of help, but, my dad had some mental health issues that he dealt with his whole life. And I think he kind of conquered those at the end, but we clashed at times, you know, and we had great times together. You know, my favorite year of my life, maybe in 1999, we spent the winter in the shop building a new locomotive for our train. And you know, who gets to do that with their dad, right? Mm-hmm. We built a train together.
Wow.
And, you know, and that train has hauled hundreds of thousands of people and made a lot of families happy. So, it was fantastic. You know, we both loved to be in the shop. I majored in engineering and ran a machine shop before I came back to the farm, and we had a great time. But then there were other times, we butted heads, mm-hmm. you know, so we had our ups and downs, you know, mm-hmm. but we stuck it out. And in the end, you know, I think we respected each other. We always did. We always respected each other. I think, there were just times where it was hard to work together.
Yeah. Well, you guys are members of the Family Business Association. I'm a member too. I'm not as involved maybe as you guys. I have been a little less active, but this is where family businesses can get to know other family businesses, get to learn ideas on what it's like to have a family business that is handed down through the generations. I'm kind of curious. You said you brought in the consultant, and that's what kind of information have you got from the family business organization? I'm assuming that idea came from someone there. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that actually we got the referral for her from that organization. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is it's so, I don't want to say refreshing is not the right word, but it's enlightening when you learn that every family business that I've ever heard of or that we've ever heard about goes through similar struggles as mm-hmm. what we've gone through. And, of course, some of them it's the end of them, you know, some of them can't work through it, but we get to go there and hear about the ones that have encountered their challenges and gotten worked their way through them and, you know, how they did it. And bringing this consultant in was all about communication really, which is the, you know, if you could give one piece of advice, to families and business together, you got to keep talking.
Yeah.
And we don't always do that when we should. Mm-hmm. Lee talked about our lunches together, and that was something I heard years ago. The family that owned the Jelly Belly business and that was something they did. I think in their case, they commuted together. Two generations for decades. They lived near each other. They were 10 miles or whatever from the plant. And they just that 10 minutes or 15 minutes in the car twice a day where there's no pressure to talk about business. If there's something that comes up, you know, it's not like, we've scheduled a meeting. You got to talk about business. Well, when we have lunch together, we talk about my grandkids. We talk about sports, politics, whatever. And if there's something pressing in the business, it will come up and we'll mm-hmm. talk about it. But we just, you know, I think we maintain the love of the family that way mm-hmm. and the closeness. And if there was one thing that I started that we do right, it's like, hey, you guys, when they came back to work, I said, I want you at my house for lunch as many days of the week as possible. You know, sometimes That's it doesn't cool. work out, but, as much as possible, we have lunch at my house.
So. That's great. My brother and I, we had our own businesses since, like, we had paper route together. You probably remember the Sacramento Union. I delivered the Sacramento Union as a kid. So I recruited my little brother to help me, and it kind of became our thing. But then our video stores and security stuff. But we went out to lunch almost every day for a few decades. One year, and we'd always split like who's going to pay, or sometimes the business paid. But one year for my birthday, I think it was for my 40th birthday, he said, I'm going to buy lunch for the next year. That was my birthday, because we go to lunch every day, right? So that was my, you give me a financial. But that was also saying, I want to have lunch with you too. Yeah. So I remember that being a very touching gift that, you know, not only was he going to pay for lunch for a year, he liked that we did that together.
Yep.
And it helped the business, and it definitely helped our relationship to be talking all the time. So I agree with you on that communication. Yeah.
And I'll go one step further on that. I just was telling Lee the other day, I think, in 2020, COVID happened, and my daughter had been with us for several years, loved the business. She was pregnant with her second child at the time. And we said, when you know, you remember the terror we all felt at the beginning of COVID, there was so much unknown. And we said, hey, you know, you don't need to be coming into work right now. Why don't you stay home with your older child? Let's not take her to daycare right now. We don't have to, we don't have to have that exposure. And anyway, so she ended up home for a while, then had her other child home for a few more months, and we're not having lunch together. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, she's like, hey, you know what? I want to be a mom, which is fine. I have zero criticism about that. My wife didn't work while the kids were growing up. And, being a mom was the priority, and that's wonderful. But she lost interest in the business, and we lost a connection that we had during that time, you know.
Yeah, you seem sad about that.
Oh, I'm still sad. Yeah, and you know, she may listen to this, so I'll but
what would you say to her right now if she was listening to this? What would you tell her?
We miss her, you know, and you know what? We miss her in the business. We still see her. We're not estranged by any means. She was just here for Christmas and you know, we get along great, but we miss her in the business. You know, she, growing up, of the three of my kids, she was the one who loved the business the most and always talked about coming back at some point. And, it doesn't lessen the way the boys felt about it or when they chose to come back there, you know, they did it for good reasons, but, it hurt when she said, nah, you know what? I'm not interested anymore. That was
what prompted her move to Idaho.
They felt they could, between her and her husband, that living up there with a lower cost of living, that she wouldn't have to work and okay. could stay home and be a mom. So,
my family right now, we're transitioning in our own way as well. And one of my buddies, he's actually Natoma Wealth Management, by the way, he suggested that we write a family mission statement. And, you know, like we all live on this property, and, you know, this unity is an asset, a valuable asset, if it can be brought together and continued. And he said he thought the key to that was writing a family mission statement. So there, but me and my wife are supposed to stay out of that. They're supposed to present the family mission statement to us, and they're in the process of preparing that or getting that going right now. Have you guys done a family mission statement, or has that ever been contemplated?
We don't even have a company mission statement.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. So do you do annual goals and things like
yes,
that?
Yeah.
We have
because that
values.
Growth isn't happened by accident.
Yeah, we have core values and
okay.
and definitely meetings, and there's just some little corporate stuff that we've probably missed along the way. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's obviously worked. You've decided, I always think of a mission statement is what we are going to be.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Or excuse me, what we are going to do. And a vision statement is what we are going to be. And it's all centered around those core values. And so how did you come up with the core values? Were they there when you got there, or did you help?
They were there when I got there. That, okay. that was something that they...
I had, for years, of course, heard about mission statements, didn't understand the point, didn't mm-hmm. take the time to try to understand it. And finally, somebody made me understand why we should have one. And I don't remember how that happened, but so I bought a book and started reading, and it said, you know, step one is to define your core values. And so we got that done, and that's as far as we got.
Yeah. Yeah. Got back to work. Hey, we got pumpkins to attend to. So,
yeah.
That's really cool. So do you have, I would imagine that there's a vision for the company. And one of the things that I think we have to get right, if we want to attract the right teammates in my world, you want to attract investors, if you want to get people to follow you, you need a compelling vision. So how compelling is your vision?
I think it's a very compelling one. You know, we always talk about what's next for us. Mm-hmm. So maybe we don't have a mission statement, but we're always talking about what's the next project. And
what's the one after that?
And the one after that and the one after that.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, I like to say 5 years of projects. They're likely 15 years of projects lined up, you know. But the nature of our business is we always have to do capital improvements. That's what we have to do mm-hmm. to keep people coming back. With that, you got to have some vision and some foresight of what to do next.
All right. Well, so I'm going to have you paint the picture for me, Lee, here. So I walk through the door. You still have the train, right, that you and your dad built, mm-hmm. right? So you got this train, and then I remember going out in the fields. Must have been on a hayride type thing. And then you get to pick out your pumpkins, but then you come back to this sort of centralized area where there's get stuff to eat and petting zoo and all that. Now, that was 10 years ago. Paint me a picture of what it is today, because I know it's changed. You've done some capital improvements since then.
Yeah, so we have 5 or 6 amusement-style rides.
Okay.
On the train, a carousel. We have an airplane ride that's kind of like the Dumbo ride at Disneyland. We have a tootling tractors is what we call it. It's just tractors that go around some scenes and animatronics sing to each other. We installed a teacup ride last year.
Wow.
We have you pick sunflowers, a petting zoo, a corn maze, you know, apple cider slushies, which is our number one seller, bakery that my grandma, you know, created, and like a food court style thing, on top of a bunch of, you know, weekend entertainments around the farm of jugglers and all that other stuff. And then, and we have a bar on site now too that's serving the hard cider that I came to make.
Okay, yeah, I see that in your shirt. Is this is this hard cider? Tell me about that. That sounds like some a reason for me to get out there.
Yeah,
again.
And one of my reasons to come back was my dad and my sister went to a class in 2019 or 2018 to how to make hard cider, and they both left that class saying, "Man, we don't have time to do that."
Ah, we'd so, love to do it, yeah. But don't. Yeah.
So you make this is a drink that it's got alcohol in it. I take it, and so you sell it there at. It's your business.
So we make it. We just, we're about to keg our first stuff for the 2025 season on Monday. Mm-hmm. We'll be our first kegging. I started making hard cider in 2020. I'm a finance guy, so I'm not a chemistry guy. Uh-huh. So I had to learn how to make it, which took some years. But it's really one of the things that really took off our business too is now you can have hard cider all around the farm. So
what's it taste like? What goes into it?
It's apple, and it's, you know, the base is apple, which is like a white wine, and we sweeten it up with a flavor. So, we have just an apple, which is back sweetened with a little apple juice concentrate, or, we have a blackberry, a pineapple guava, or a pear. So we have four different flavors right now.
Wow.
But the base of that is all fermented apple juice.
Okay. And then the only place to get it is at your location, or are you guys selling it through retail?
Just at the farm right now. Okay. We are, constrained with, space right now where we make it
just to get it made for what we can serve.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've run out all year for the 9 weeks we're open.
Yeah.
Okay. So now paint me a picture. You say you have these capital improvements that are, that you've dreamt up. Is that to make the place, different? Obviously you need to put capital, you got to put money into your business to keep it going, but are you going to do new things? What are those things going to look like?
Yeah. So, this year, our big project is a big snow tube style slide that's six lanes, it's 50, 60 feet in the air, goes 200 feet long.
My goodness. Yeah. Okay, snow tube style. So,
so you sit on like a snow tube and go down this big, huge hill. It's all bumpered contained and you can race each other.
Okay.
Not with actual snow though, but
You're going down. Is it dirt or?
No, it's on a, it's plastic.
It's a turf, which is the same thing that like skiers or boarders use to train on when there's no snow. Same stuff.
And then how high is it again?
Well, the actual drop I think is around 35 feet, but we're going to put it in, we're going to put that coming out of a building that's going to look like an old grain elevator or one of the old rice dryers that are in our area. So that building is going to be almost 50 feet tall.
Okay.
And so it's going to be a real landmark.
And so you walk upstairs to get there and then you go down the slide and it's 200 feet
long.
Yeah.
And you're going, so are you engineering this?
Well, yeah, somewhat. Yeah. I mean, which is what I'm still, that's why he's letting me still work for him.
Yeah. You got that mechanical engineering manager,
stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I enjoy doing the most are the new projects on the farm. So
it's for adults or kids, I take it.
Either.
And you're going pretty fast, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yep. It's a big, and a lot of farms have done a smaller version of this. You know, we're doing six lanes. A lot of farms have done two lanes of it.
I like the six lanes. That way, brothers and sisters can go down at the same time and kind of race. Yeah.
So anyway, that's one of the projects. But, you know, we're working on we're really behind on food service right now. Our crowd is demanding more food, more lunch items. So we're working on another kitchen, which would be a chicken strips and corn dog style. We want another building for hard cider production so we can make it permanent in there. We desperately need more bathrooms. Our customers are begging for more bathrooms right now. We have to kind of backfill with porter potties.
We're also thinking about what the next amusement ride will be. Those take, if you're going to order a new one, take it about a year and a half to get them. So we're going to go to Germany this summer and look at one that we think we like. And
we were talking about subsea systems earlier. Have you talked to people that are obviously really good on underwater rides and things like that, but they build amusement type rides. Have you talked to those guys at all about what you're thinking?
Not really. It's interesting. You know, they go to the same conference we do in Orlando when we're going to look for these things. And we haven't specifically talked to them about what they could do for us. We should do that.
It's fun because, you know, they've got such imagination.
Yeah. They were developing a ride last time we talked to them, actually, an underwater ride. Yeah.
And for those listening, Subsea Systems has got an underwater car, among other rides, and they have them in like resort areas typically, but they're also a family business, and a lot like you guys. I mean, just a great story of innovation and growth and stick-to-itiveness. So tell me more about what you see for the next 12 months or so with you and your brother. You know, you've got to get through your probationary period, and how does that, if he doesn't get through it, do we go to the consultant or brother?
I like to think I already completed it, because the thing she told us last February, I think it was, you know, okay, we decided to leave, is probably the next guy. And Dad said, well, I'm not going to let you do it, take the title till next year, but you can act like it now. So I've already done it for a year, in my opinion, but, you know, he's still holding the probationary card.
I just made that up when we got here.
But. I love it. So. I love it that you're still involved in the business, too. It makes it, you know, there's a lot of continuity.
I'll tell you what, Mark, I'm the happiest I've ever been right now, because, you know, these guys are more than ready to run the company. I still get to work in it and do the fun parts and do some other things with my time that I want to work on, too, and. It's great. These 3 weeks have been great.
Oh, that's great. Well, a lot of people want to shy away from the 800 employees in California kind of thing. So you have 800, I guess most of them are seasonal type employees, but some of these employees work year-round to keep the business operational, you know, keep the farm rolling. How difficult is that to... it seems to me that it'd be running the farm piece is, you know, that's kind of like that just kind of continues. But when you have to staff up for these seasons, talk to me about what goes into that.
Yeah. So luckily, most of that's not on my plate.
Okay. But, that's your brother?
Our HR manager.
Oh, okay.
It's been a process. I think we've grown it certainly over the last few years of the last 10, 15 years, our HR program. My mom kind of started that. And then my sister came in, was our HR manager for a long time, and kind of developed this, our strategy going into it. Now our HR manager and my wife play a big role in getting the people out. You know, we have 20 full-time employees right now. We have one HR manager. We'll bring in another 8 to 10 people to help with the hiring process. We'll hire 850-ish employees. You know, last year we had about 550 that were returners. So their paperwork.
Oh, wow. That makes it so much easier. So you have supervisors. You have people coming back. You already have your little management staff sort of set up.
Right. Yeah. That was a struggle for us, especially in 2020 and 2021. We lost a lot. Our retention rate on seasonal employees was not good. So we spent a lot of effort over the last 3 or 4 years to try to develop some strategies to get people to come back year after year, and it's working now. So we're only hiring 300 or so brand new employees. Everybody else comes in, they know the drill. You know, we usually put them back to where they were the previous season. It makes life a lot easier. My brother and I were talking just the other day how much easier the start of this season was than previous season, and it was, you know, the biggest year we've ever had.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about getting returners.
So a number of years ago now, I couldn't tell you exactly what year it was, but we went over $1 million in payroll that year. And now we're $4-4.5 million.
Yeah.
But we went over $1 million, and I thought, holy cow, we've never spent that much on anything. You know, any improvement we'd ever made on the farm at that point had never spent $1 million. And I thought, here we are spending it every year on people. Mm-hmm. And yet we put very little effort into making sure that we're getting the best people and that we're training them and giving them the culture that we want them to pass on. So really my wife jumped in at that point. You know, we talked about it, and we happened to go to a seminar that year where a lady talked about how to do behavioral interviews. And And so we made some huge changes at that time, started getting better people. And then like Lee and his wife have worked on this the last three, yeah, 4 years.
So. The interview process hasn't really changed since my mom took it over.
Yeah.
It's relatively similar. You know, we have to hire kids and that's a struggle.
Right. Most of the workers that you hire are direct facing with customers.
Yeah. The good half of them at least. And anyway, so yeah, my mom really built up that first half part of it. And then, you know, my wife really has built up the back half, which is retaining them and getting them to come back. And so, you know, we have to do a lot of incentives to get them to come back year after year, but it's working.
What's great too is that for some reason we don't fully understand. Hopefully just people enjoy working for us, but hopefully that's the reason. But we just get a ton of applicants. Other than those couple of COVID years, you know, last year we had over 1,000 kids apply in a week, and we had to shut that off.
Well, there's only 3,500 people in Wheatland. I know the high school there, you have Lyndhurst High School is out there. What else? Wheatland High School.
But we get a lot from Yuba County in general. So Plumas Lake.
But also Sutter County and some from Placer.
Okay, people's going to drive for that type of thing. It's probably a great... it was probably like a part-time job for most people, right?
It's before Christmas. So you can put a couple extra $1,000 in your pocket right before Christmas. That's how we get a lot of good people on the weekends.
Yeah. And people probably parents. Yeah. You have any like parents that drive out there and their kid is a worker, their teenage kid is a worker and they're a worker.
Yeah.
Cause that'd be transportation for a 16 or 17 year old might, you know, it's harder, especially if you got to drive 20 minutes.
We've had that happen a number of times where we hire a kid and then their mom will come in and say, you know what? I got to drive here anyway. Could I work too? And
That's awesome. Yeah, we get a lot. And it just seems like we're getting better at that because I think we're doing a really good job treating our employees well. Mm-hmm. We're getting four or five or six people from the same household
working
for us. And it really makes everything a lot easier because they also hold each other accountable when they're not doing something right in whatever building.
And that's the thing too, is that when you get a family working for you, you know, we have several of these families that like this, they care about the business as much as we do. You know, they really consider it their own as much as we do. And when you can have that in an employee,
that's unique,
special. Yeah.
So your wives are both in the business. Your mom and dad were both in the business. I mean, I couldn't work with my wife. no way. We worked together great at home, but, you know, 40 years and we started working together in the video stores back in the day, but, you know, she worked in accounting. I was more like a customer facing. So we didn't really work together. I don't know how you guys do that.
You know, it's not for everybody. My wife and I were doing great until, you know, we just got done doing a huge remodel on a house. And that almost was almost.
Did you keep living in the house during the remodel?
No, fortunately, we didn't have to do that. But yeah, that was tougher than working together on the farm. But I'm not sure what makes it, how it works that well. We just, maybe we chose good women.
I think, between my wife is a very hard worker, so it's pretty easy to work with her because she wants to work. It's shutting her brain off at night. That's what I struggle with because she wants to work till we're laying in bed. I'm like, hey, I'm going to sleep now. But I think what drives us is we all have the same passion for the business to grow. Me and my brother, my dad, and my wife, and my mom, we all want success. We all want it to grow. So that's really, I think, if we all have that at the root of ourselves, that's all you need, really.
Too is our business, and there are others like this too. But there's a lot of businesses where you just don't get the gratification that we get. You know, we're so lucky that if you're in your office and you're a little grumpy and not feeling it, you can walk outside and see a lot of happy families. And when you see that. And a lot of times they'll recognize us and, you know, want to talk and just tell us, hey, we just love coming here. Thank you for doing this. That can smooth over the rough patches real easy.
Yeah. So. You know, I had talked to you, I think before the show about like, we have these 74 acres out in Loomis, which is like 6 minutes from here and on right off Horseshoe Bar. And there's 31 acres that would be ideal for either developing new houses, like custom homes, or something like a pumpkin farm or something, you know, Christmas tree stuff. So, and my family gets excited about these kind of ideas because they're kind of entrepreneurial. And then, you know, it's like, what do you wish for? Be careful what you wish for. My mentality was, yeah, it would be cool to go out there and see the kids, or if you had your buddies out there drinking some hard cider, let's go hang out. But I can only imagine what goes into doing, you know, starting it from scratch. And so I've always thought, well, what if you could partner with somebody to put that experience together, and maybe you could contribute however you were able to, but somebody else is sort of running the operations. Well, your thoughts on that? Have you thought about expanding somewhere else? Not necessarily my place, obviously.
Well, it's not a hard no on your place.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Good, yeah. It's always a discussion. Okay.
Can we head over there right now?
Yeah, let's go over there. So it's the perfect location. But I did drive down Horseshoe Bar the other day, and I saw another place that was doing something similar to that. So yeah. It would be smaller than ours would be, though. Mm-hmm. Ours would be special. Not that there isn't, I don't even know them. So, but anyway, yeah, it just seems like such a cool idea, especially when I have a bunch of grandkids that could put them to work and stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, you always got to stay open to business opportunities. Yeah. And if the right one were to hit us, you got to take advantage. And I think that's the mentality. We haven't had that, at least in a while, the right opportunity come up to where we're like, let's get that farm and let's, you know, make another Bishop's pumpkin farm. I think we're always open to that. We're always open to ideas.
That's maybe if you guys have time right after the show, we'll drive over there. But if not, no pressure. It's just a podcast. We go look and you can paint me a picture of what it might look like or something, what the pros and cons are. So, Anyway, what did I not ask you? Like, I want to make sure you have a chance to really tell your story the way that you want it to be told.
You know, we belong to a couple of organizations, and so we of what I call the funny farmers in the country, you know, that do similar things to what we do. And so we visited a lot of farms. We talked to a lot of people. The thing that I think we do better than all of them is the food. And, you know, it started from my mom's bakery. And we make a pumpkin pie from an heirloom variety pumpkin that we grow. And I actually take credit for saving that pumpkin from, you know, there was a time where it was really hard to get seed because nobody was growing it anymore. And there are a bunch of things we do like that. And we make food from scratch. We make caramel for our caramel apples. We press apples into cider. And now we ferment it to hard cider, and we go to the extra work to make the food good. Mm. And I don't know. I'm kind of a food guy. When I travel, mm-hmm. I always remember what I ate, mm-hmm. especially if it was good.
Yeah.
And I associate that with my memories, like, you know, oh yeah, we visited this, you know, I was in Nuremberg, Germany, and I had the most awesome German sausage I ever, and I started eating mustard. I never ate mustard before in my life, but I ate it the way the Germans do. And now mm-hmm. I like mustard, you know,
yeah.
So to me, that's the thing that has been the predominant driver for our growth, you know. And now we have these rides, we have a full day's experience if you want to bring your family out. I still think it's the food that brings people out.
Interesting. Is it, you got to, I know, I believe you pay to park, you pay to get in and then you can buy the stuff. What's the mechanics in terms of?
No, I think that's another thing that makes us really unique is we're open 65, I'm pushing 70 days a year. We charge parking 12 days a year, just October, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And the rest of the year, we're admission free.
Okay.
You can walk in and choose your own adventure. If you just want to come in and have dinner and a hard cider, that is totally okay.
Wow.
If you want to come and just ride the rides and not buy anything else, that is totally okay.
So it could be a real affordable night out for a family that's on a real budget.
You can bring your own picnic if you want to.
Wow.
And so, there's not a lot of places in the world that do that still. You know,
that's
they're charging
really special.
You $30 to get in the gate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk is like that too. But I think that really makes us different in our industry, that I don't care if you spend $5 with us or $100 with us. Just come and have a good night. You know, that's what's important, I think, to us as a family.
That's really cool.
Okay, anything else I didn't ask you? I had to let your dad chime in for his thoughts on the food.
No, I don't think so. I think we had a lot of good stuff today.
Well, yeah. Congratulations, and thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for making so many families happy, employing people and getting them their Christmas money, and maybe for a lot of people, their first job. Those experiences that we get in our early years, whether it be going to the pumpkin farm and grabbing a pumpkin or a pumpkin pie, or just our first jobs, we want to be in a wholesome place like what you guys offer. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mark, for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.